Hello, publishing spectators, publishing experts, publishing side hustlers, and publishing newbies. Wherever you are on the publishing journey, this episode is going to shine light into the dark recesses of this wild industry, because it matters that writers, aspiring authors, and authors alike, all of you, hopefully encompassing our audience out there, know about this marshland that is this publishing ecosystem. And listeners, many of you know I'm a publisher. I've been working in the industry for 24 years. I'm still learning about things from the publishing industry. I'm here with my co-host, Grant Faulkner, an author who by default has learned a lot about book publishing over the years. And so, Grant, we're going to talk about how hard it can be, overwhelming for writers and authors alike, you know, when you're trying to figure out what publishing is, why it does things the way that it does. And I just want to say to our listeners, if you feel this way, you're normal. The publishing really does elicit head scratching and moans of frustration and head shaking and eye rolling. And Grant, I want to ask you about what level of education aspiring authors should have about this industry that they're in. And maybe it depends on the personality of the author, but tell me, you know, from where you sit as an author looking in at the industry, how much involvement and know-how do you have, you know, or want to have with publishers and within the industry more broadly?
Yeah, Brooke, I'm actually just doing a lot of head shaking and eye rolling and head scratching, you know, just at the mention
most
of the
days.
Topic. Yeah. I actually have strong feelings about this because I think there's a long history of publishers essentially infantilizing authors, actually since the beginning of publishing, I'd say. And that means like not including them in any of the business decisions around their book, because authors and especially fiction writers are thought of as being creatives who just don't know about the other parts of the business. So authors are kept on the sidelines and their input is often, you know, manipulated to stay on the sidelines. And that goes, you know, I think agents do that and editors. And I think authors have also played into this role as well, because there was a day when so much was done for them, you know, such as all the publicity and the marketing and the book tour. But now the author needs to be a business person at the table with a vote on many things. And publishers can be very coy and cryptic when it comes to giving an author the seat, however. So I think authors need to be even a little bit pushy to make sure that they're heard. And so, yeah, in the end, I think it behooves authors to know the business side of writing, just as I think it behooves like professional athletes to know the business side of their sport. Otherwise, you're likely to get, you know, taken advantage of or just not get what you deserve.
Good advice on the authorly side. Thanks for that. Today's guest, Kathleen Schmidt, is on the publishing side. She is the perfect person to talk to about all of this. She has this fabulous newsletter on Substack called Publishing Confidential, where she's educating writers and authors about the industry. There are a lot of amazing publishing people out there, and I love reading about publishing and what's happening, but it's not all that often that I come across someone like Kathleen, who I feel like is really speaking my language across all of the points. I have yet to read something from her that I don't agree with. She's also a straight shooter. She's not bullshitting anyone. She's also calling it out as she sees it and truly trying to support authors and set expectations. So do check out her Substack, Publishing Confidential. I do a lot of that kind of writing myself, you know, or just calling out, I guess, you know, so maybe I do see a soul sister in her, but regardless, it's great. And in our interview with her today, I basically want to pepper her with a bunch of questions about topics that she's covered in her Substack posts, because a lot of them speak to things that I see in publishing, things that feel broken, things that authors feel confused about. And I think a lot of people agree that traditional publishing is fundamentally problematic for the way that it gambles such big money on books that often don't earn out, and, you know, how publishing also can sometimes make pariahs out of authors who don't sell as well as the publisher had hoped, but then those publishers are not giving those authors enough support sometimes. So it's, again, confusing for authors. You know, do you want me to succeed? And if so, put the money behind me so that I can. And when I was talking with a publishing friend just this week, went out to coffee with someone, and we were talking about how publishers often consider authors a necessary annoyance, basically, which is kind of what you were saying. You know, it's like, oh, these authors, they don't know what they're talking about. We just need their books. And that dynamic stems from the fact that some publishers would surely prefer to just have the authors out of the picture. But the problem is that, you know, this kind of publisher behavior is precipitating, you know, authors turning elsewhere. And this is why I think that non-traditional publishing models are increasingly more popular, because authors want different kinds of relationships with their publishers, and authors want to be involved. It's one of the reasons that co-publishing and hybrid publishing is actually a popular business model. And so I'm just curious, Grant, like, you come out of the world of traditional publishing, but you have had good experiences, I know, with some of the indie presses that you've worked with. Maybe you can't say too much, but have you felt that they value your input and what you want? Or have you sometimes felt at odds with your publishers?
Yeah, I think all the above to some extent, but I've also been fortunate for the most part in there, you know, because there have been moments when my agent stepped in and very astutely made sure that our opinions are being considered. And I wouldn't have done that. I would have been the meek author who didn't know how to speak up. So anyway, I was fortunate in some respects, but I'll tell one story that I think illustrates the author as necessary annoyance in publishers' minds that you mentioned. I love that characterization. It's spot on. And the story I'm about to tell, you know, I've had this experience several times, and I know authors who've had the same experience. And it's a being shown the first draft of your cover design for your book. And what happens is that I'll get a gushing email from my editor telling me what an amazing cover they have. And then everyone at the publishing house, editors, publicists, marketers, the janitor, anyone who saw it was just in love with it. It couldn't be better. It's perfect. And they show it to me, kind of not really asking for feedback, you know, and the whole world will be CC'd on this email. So it's one of those emails that's like, let us know what you think. But, you know, everything's so great that if you tell us what you think, it's going to be wrong because everybody else thinks otherwise. And the first time I experienced this was my first book with a more major publisher. And the cover was just wildly off the mark. And fortunately, my agent thought so as well. So she pushed back and we got new designs. And as with any, you know, kind of collaborative creative process, we arrived at a really good cover that I think everyone was happy with and happier. And this has happened with each of my books, though, even though I've had different editors and designers and publishers. And each time we had to play the squeaky wheel role and be a necessary annoyance. But each time the cover got decidedly better. And the reason it's important to include authors in this and not view them as an annoyance is that I now like all of my covers, which is really important for my own promotional efforts. You know, I want my books to be seen. I don't want to hide them.
That's so funny, Grant. I love that story. And I have to say, I'm probably guilty of having done that to my authors, you know, and it's interesting because it's like where you sit in the industry matters, but it also matters how you talk to your authors about it, right? Because we do that thing where it's like, I love these. I can't wait to hear your thoughts about them. And of course, in my case, I always say to our authors, like, look, if you're not happy with the covers, let's have a proactive conversation about it and, you know, get on the phone about what needs to change and why. But I think the problem with traditional publishers is they never have that nuanced conversation, right? They're just sort of like, here it is, and you're going to be happy with it. So definitely been there.
Definitely.
I wanted to talk about another thing that Kathleen covers in her Substack posts a fair amount, which is about publishing being so over-reliant on social media. And so I love that we're going to dive into this a bit in the interview. You know, she's advocating for a more holistic approach to author platform and to how publishers think about the authors that they're acquiring, which of course is a very sane approach. You know, it's like we're in this weird space where the industry is so obsessed with author platform, which for those of you who are not familiar with the term, that just means that the authors have to have an already built-in audience or that they need to be very active online with lots of followers, lots of engagement. And I think the most obvious place to measure this, of course, is through social media. But what a lot of publicists are saying, Kathleen loudly, is that it's short-sighted. Because if social media is the be-all, end-all when it comes to measuring sales outcomes, it just doesn't leave room for other things, other creativity. And then not to mention, we're seeing, you know, what is happening with Twitter essentially imploding. You know, people are just losing. They're being deplatformed in a sense. And she's made the point that what happens if TikTok gets banned? I mean, there's just so many considerations. And so I think that it's just good to look at because not many people are having this conversation about what might we be doing. And I really appreciate that Kathleen talks about what we might be doing. And also that she says, you know, look, some of our most successful books have been from authors who have little to no platform, whose books have sold on the power of the writing, the message, the author's personality. You know, so there's more to this business than just author platform. And I know, Grant, so many authors get frustrated about the sort of boxing in that happens on this particular conversation.
It's really true. It's really sad. And, you know, I've noticed people who are a hit on social media, but that doesn't necessarily translate into book sales, you know? And I also, I have a friend who actually just launched a book and she's not on social media at all. But she, you know, puts a lot of effort into her real friendships in real life. And those people do buy books and they show up at book launches. I mean, she did 2 parties for her book and it was just like, there were hundreds of people there. So I'm curious, Brooke, if after all these years of helping authors know that they need to build their platform, if now you're saying to aspiring authors is to not give up if you don't have much of an author platform.
Oh, I thought you were going to say... Now, are you saying that they don't have to have an author platform, right? So there's
that.
Two, right? So it's no, they absolutely still need to have an author platform. Speaking of necessary evils or necessary annoyances, and it's yes to maybe it doesn't need to look exactly as traditional publishing tells you it needs to look. So it's both and. Nobody should say like, oh, author platform doesn't matter, because it does. And I think what Kathleen and I are both on the same page about is that it doesn't have to be only social media. There's just this obsession with followers, and that's just not what it's all about. And for authors, you know, I think there's a lot about changing your expectations. I mean, Kathleen says this in the interview as well. It's not all about the big 5. I know a lot of authors who have had barely their platforms who've then been able to sell their books to publishers, but they're smaller publishers, right? And this is a really vast ecosystem. There are a lot of players. We've said this before on previous episodes, but you do want to cast your net wide when you're shopping your manuscript. And or, as I have said many times, and including in my TEDx talk, you sometimes have to make room for a new dream. And that's why a lot of people end up hybrid publishing or self-publishing.
Publishing's changing, obviously, so much. And in today's trend, actually, we're going to tackle a brand new publishing imprint called Authors Equity. And it was founded by some of the, you know, most illustrious New York editors, all of whom took a buyout package from traditional publishing in recent years. And it's a non-traditional business model, which is very interesting, got a lot of people's attention. And it just bolsters what you're saying, though, Brooke, that the ecosystem is vast and getting even ever vaster. And that's another reason for authors to be paying attention, because if you want to publish, you want and need to know your options. And there are more ways to get published than ever before, but also more ways to get taken advantage of than ever before. So change breeds opportunity, as they say, but that can be a double-edged sword.
Great point. And that's why it's also great to connect with folks who are at the forefront of that change, you know, who are watching, paying attention, writing about what they see. Kathleen is one of those people. So I couldn't be more thrilled to connect with her about one of my favorite topics. And we are going to do just that after this short break. Welcome back, everyone. I'm so thrilled to have Kathleen Schmidt on the show with us today. She's a well-respected voice in book publishing. As founder of Kathleen Schmidt Public Relations, she applies her in-depth experience in all aspects of the industry, including as a publicist, literary agent, acquisitions editor, and ghostwriter, to every project she takes on. Her career encompasses 30 years of creating and directing impactful and strategic global media, marketing, and branding campaigns. She's worked with A-list celebrities, athletes, and high-profile personalities. And to date, she has worked on 50 New York Times bestsellers. So impressive. Kathleen, I'm so happy to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So when I was coming up with the questions I wanted to ask you, I was thinking to myself, where to even start? You came on my radar because of your wonderful Substack, and everything you write is basically everything I think. And so I just want to tell you, we are mind melded.
Thank you. It's good to know.
So tell me about your motivation for your Substack. It's called Publishing Confidential. So clearly its orientation is to let writers and authors know about the inside and complicated world of book publishing. But say more about why you started it and who you're trying to reach and why.
There was a first iteration of it about 8 years ago. I was between jobs and I didn't know what I was going to do next. So I figured, let me sign up for MailChimp. Let me design a newsletter. I'm going to call it Publishing Confidential. I announced it on Twitter and I had maybe 100, maybe less than that, emails. I only sent out 2 editions. I don't even remember what I wrote about. And then I started working as a literary agent. And, you know, then it became clear that I couldn't write about the industry the way I wanted to and be an agent at the same time dealing with publishers. So fast forward to, you know, March 2023, I had left my last in-house job. I had started my own company. I kept hearing things about Substack and I, you know, thought, let me check it out. And I migrated my email addresses over to Substack and I decided to write a piece about AI and the end of the English major, which is, you know, a riff off of an article in the New Yorker. And it got a really good reaction. I had no expectation that anybody was going to read it. I thought my publishing friends would read it. And then as I started to write it more, I started feeling like I wanted to reach authors because I felt like they weren't getting information from publishers. And having been in a situation far too many times where I could not really tell an author truly what was going on or explain things to them or having to explain how the business works to them, I thought there was a need for something, you know, like almost like a guide to explain the business to authors, aspiring authors, to other people in the industry who might be more junior. And that really was the motivation for it. And that's who I'm trying to reach. And I am so surprised at the growth and the, you know, the ongoing subscribers, the, you know, the feedback, everything is just such a surprise to me. I'm really grateful for it, but I'm really author-centered. I'm really trying to reach those people who need to understand what they're getting into when they're getting into, you know, a book deal or even working in publishing.
Yeah, your newsletter is such a delight. Like if I was going to say to someone, read this publicist newsletter, I don't think I could convey that it's not just a publicist newsletter. You know, like when Brooke said that she's mind melded with you, I am too, you know, and it's because I'm not only learning about the book world and the publicity world. I don't know, somehow there's more there. But I am curious what you said earlier about how you had to stop writing it when you're an agent. And so I'm curious about that lens of being a publicist and how that specifically informs your take and critique on the publishing industry.
I think that, you know, part of it is that I have seen so much in the almost 30 years that I've been doing this, that and been in very frustrating positions where I would try to tell other executives, this is what should happen, or this is what, you know, this is what I think, or we shouldn't buy this book because XYZ, but they went ahead and did it anyway. It felt to me like I wasn't as empowered as I could be, and I wasn't being heard. And that was really the crux of it. I feel like for the first time ever, really, in my career, I'm being heard with the newsletter. And the other part of it that really got to me was I'm not just a publicist. And people tend to put publicists in this box where, oh, this is what you do. You're only dealing with the media every day. That is so not what I am mm-hmm. every day. I refer to myself more as a strategist. And, you know, the landscape has changed so much that I don't feel like you can just be a publicist anymore. I feel like you have to have a lot of other skill sets. And that's really where I come from. You know, I've done so many different things in the industry and have seen how it works in so many ways. I think the two most formative experiences for me were being a literary agent and being an associate publisher outside of being a publicist. I really learned a lot about the business in those two positions, because one is very sales oriented and the other one is the shock of learning what advances are really like for authors and then deciding that maybe you don't want to be a literary agent anymore because you have to wait like 2 years for your last payment. You know, those were two very formative experiences for me. And I just, and the other part of it is too, I want to make sure that, you know, authors know their why. Like, why do you want to publish a book? It can't just be because you want to write and you feel like you have to get this story out. Really know the why behind why you're doing this, because it's not going to be easy.
Mm-hmm. such good advice. Well, you had this post back in March that was great because it premised this idea that everybody seems a bit discontent with publishing these days, whether it's advances, where books are sold, or promotion. I definitely feel this way. You know, there's a lot that's not working in the industry, but it also seems unfixable. So I'm curious if your overall take on publishing is that it's broken or if that there's more opportunity because of the unfixableness. And since I sense that you're a person who can hold both things to be true at the same time, I guess the question is like, where are the bright spots?
I'm actually really optimistic about publishing. And this is why. There, you know, you see all the layoffs happening in the media sector. You know, there's layoffs happening in the music industry, you know, in entertainment industry. Publishing always lasts. You know, publishing, no matter what we say about it, it's built to last. So my feeling is, you know, optimistic, but with a but, it is broken. And it's broken because there's a lot of inequities in the business. There's a lot of dependence on having big hits carry your entire company rather than figuring out how to do it without those big books, or, you know, being more equitable with your authors and not taking on books that you can't put any promotional muscle behind. And this is more specifically to the big five. You know, it's just people are very stuck on this idea that I have to be published by one of the big five publishers. And my question to them is why? Because, you know, a lot of people, most consumers, don't even know the publisher of the book they're reading. And it's not to say you're going to get better marketing, better distribution, better publicity if you go with a big five. Nothing against them. I mean, everybody has their something. And I've worked for big fives. You know, what you get is what, a bigger staff that's overburdened? I don't know. But I feel like I mean, it's true, yeah. You know, and I feel like the bright spots in the industry are independent publishers. I feel like those are the bright spots. And that those bright spots are the things that allow someone like me, for instance, to think about, you know, I want to start a publishing company. This is what I want to do with it. This is how I want to go about it. And it doesn't feel impossible. It feels very possible because you have publishers doing the same thing that they've always done over and over again, but it still doesn't work. And then they complain about revenue, but they're not changing anything really. So that's where I'm at with the industry. I think the biggest frustration for me is just watching the big five over and over again do the same stuff. And the joy to me is all the independent publishers who aren't attached to a big conglomerate who can take risks.
We're on the same page, Kathleen, and just to dig a little deeper into that, doing something again and again, no matter what the results are. In the post that Brooke mentioned, you wrote, "Let's clarify: author advances don't make sense most of the time." And
no,
and this is such a great line. Well, yeah, I want to hear more about why author advances don't make sense, and does this mean that authors shouldn't covet them so much?
Authors should not covet them that much because one, it's not indicative of the worth of your writing. Two, publishing math is, you know, like fantasy math sometimes. And you're kind of like, well, what do we give this person? You know, it's hard to put a number on somebody's creative endeavor. You know, it's kind of like looking at a painting and deciding what that painting is worth. Well, if you're Van Gogh and you're known, it's millions and millions of dollars. But if you're unknown, how do you put a number on that? What is the worth of it? And I think that's where a lot of mistakes are made with publishers and authors because it messes with their psyche. And, you know, if you get a $20,000 advance, you think you think your book is less than, and then, you know, you get $150,000 or $500,000 advance. And guess what? You still don't think your book is that good or is going to get as much attention because you're not sure how the business works. So I've talked to authors, you know, who have gotten as low as, you know, $1,500 or $5,000. And I've talked to authors who have gotten $1 million or over and have had consultations with them. everybody is in the same boat. No one is all that happy. Everyone feels like they're lost. They're not sure what's going on. You know, what I always say is, you know, and this is unfortunate, if I'm talking to someone with $1 million advance, it's, well, yeah, they're going to put muscle behind the book because they want to make the advance back. And then when I'm talking to someone with a lower advance, I'm kind of like, well, they're not probably going, you know, they're probably not going to pay a lot of attention to the book because it's low stakes for them. And that's unfortunate to me because I feel like I've worked on a lot of books that have been low stakes for publishers, but they're actually fantastic books. And if more marketing maybe was put behind them, and more attention, more individualized attention, they probably would have done something. Book probably would have sold better.
Right. It's like self-fulfilling prophecies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
You know, I liked your post so much that I'm going to keep going with the next point that you made, which also had me nodding. You said you can't emphasize this enough. Do not, under any circumstances, call or email Barnes & Noble corporate office to get them to carry your book. Kathleen, please say more about BNN and what the heck is going on over there, because it's like the twilight zone to me. Like when I interact with people on the store level and try to talk to them about ordering, I honestly feel like I'm in like a Gen Z punked redo. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like these people are on a different planet than I am. And I wonder what your take is, please.
I think you've hit it on the nose. I think that, you know, James Daunt, their new CEO for the past few years, came in, cleaned house, got rid of all these wonderful buyers that have been there, you know, forever, and decided to give the power back to the managers of each store to decide what they're going to order. That said, his edict is that he wants no returns. He doesn't want to deal with that. He wants, you know, he doesn't want returns. He doesn't want any co-op. So that's dollars spent for real estate in the bookstore, for people who don't know. You know, back in the day, you know, big publishers would spend $25,000 for front of store placement in BNN or step ladders. That's like the display you see with some books. And then that disappeared because they want to be in charge of what they put in each store. There is no corporate buyer. It's totally dependent on the manager of each store. My problem with that is that then you're talking about that person's taste and not so much what the consumer wants. And I don't know how in tune with the consumer any of those stores are, because every single Barnes & Noble I go into, I do feel like it's the Twilight Zone, because I can't find, I remember I went into my local BNN, I couldn't find David Sedaris books anywhere. And I'm like, he's like a huge author. Why can't I find him? And they had maybe two books. And I talked to the manager and said, well, you know, they don't really sell well in this store. That was odd to me.
Yeah.
But the reason I wrote that is because I saw an author post on Threads that they had called BNN corporate. Like they went into one of the stores, they weren't carrying their books. It was a self-published author. And then they started calling corporate, and there is a way, you know, they do have forms and things on their website that do, you know, tell you what to do if you'd like them to carry a book, but that's all smoke and mirrors. You know, they're not going to carry those books. They're going to carry stuff that they know will sell. Mm-hmm. That's the model he wants. He doesn't want to take chances on unknown authors. And you know, it's kind of like, why don't you just hand your business on a silver platter to Amazon? Because that's exactly what's happening.
Well, Kathleen, I want to talk about social media a little bit, because I know you have some strong feelings about it. And I loved a note you posted recently where you said something to the effect, I keep screaming into the wind that publishers need to rely less on social media platforms. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, as an author especially, can you share more of what this looks like and what they're relying on them for? You know, or is it to find authors, to sell books? And how much do influencers even shape what's being published and what consumers buy?
Publishers put the onus on authors to have a platform. And they, you know, and I don't deny that, you know, it's helpful when somebody has a platform for name recognition. But I will die on the hill that, you know, most social media does not sell books. You know, I've been on Twitter for 15 years. I've worked with many authors with all kinds of followings on Twitter, Instagram, And it never propelled the book the way the publisher thought it would, because, you know, you're at the mercy of someone else's algorithm, you know, and that's the problem. And the other part of it is, on social media, you're just renting an audience. You don't own the audience, you know, not like you do on Substack or any other newsletter platform, where if I knew Substack was going out of business, I could download all of my subscribers into a spreadsheet and start over somewhere else. You can't do that on social media. You can't quit Twitter and bring your followers over to Threads. It doesn't work that way. So I feel like, you know, the answer to everything in publishing for a long time has been, well, social media, well, pre-sale, you know, get pre-sales, post a link on social media. That doesn't work for the most part. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because we are in an attention economy, and the algorithm is built so that you're seeing things that you're looking at online and other places. You know, I looked at one website yesterday for literally 2 minutes, and then in every social media feed that has advertising, an ad for this website came up. So that's how precise they are. And, you know, I really have a problem with publishing, you know, putting all of its eggs in TikTok's basket, because one, it takes a lot for a book to go viral on BookTok, and it happens organically. You know, two, I talk to authors who are like, should I get on TikTok and start making videos? And I tell them no, because who's going to see them? It doesn't mean that much. It's not as meaningful. It's not connecting. It's not truly connecting with your audience. You're just putting it out there because you think you should be on TikTok. And thirdly, you know, what if it gets banned? That's a very real possibility. And then that goes away. What's the plan? What's the plan after that? So I always feel like publishing needs a plan B after social media, because everything is so like, we'll push this out on social media. Mm-hmm. You put your pre-order link on social media. Pre-orders are not working that well, because consumers want what they want when they want it. And unless you are a huge celebrity or a high profile person with a, you know, with an exciting book coming out, or, you know, a high profile author with a, you know, name recognition, the pre-orders are just not going to be there. They're not in a meaningful way.
Such valuable information for authors to understand, Kathleen. So thank you. You know, in closing, I'm a person to whom many people love to ask the question, where do I see publishing in 5 years? But I am not going to ask you that BS question. It's impossible to answer. And so instead, I want to ask, what is one of your biggest frustrations with publishing? And if you had a wish from a genie who appeared to you out of a recently rubbed lamp, what would you wish to change?
My biggest frustration with publishing is that they refuse to change the way they do things sometimes, well, a lot of the times. And if I had one wish, I would wish that they would be more open to taking risks and trying new things. And those things would be, you know, creating their own platform, banding together with other publishers. I mean, it's kind of ludicrous that there isn't, you know, a platform where all the publishers can go and have some sort of consortium of social media for just publishing or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's also surprising to me that none of the big five have their own apps. You know, why isn't that happening? So I would really wish for the publishing industry to get into this century and in order to prepare for the next century, because it's still so slow compared to other industries. And this is why it's so hard, I think, for traditional publishing to find different revenue streams. And that's the other part of it. Like, if they took more risks, I feel like they would find different collaborations and revenue streams. Just stop doing things the way you've always done them and take a look at what's happening at, you know, at the retail level holistically, not just in publishing, but everywhere. And then come back and maybe adjust your business model.
That's so great. Yeah. We're 24 years into this century and somehow it just feels like publishing is like barely noticing. Yep. So thank you, Kathleen. Such a fun interview. Appreciate you so much.
Thanks, Kathleen. Always illuminating.
Oh, appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
We'll be right back with today's book trend after this short break.
Well, Grant, you seeded what today's trend was going to be, and it's well matched for today's guest because Kathleen wrote a Substack about this brand new imprint, Authors Equity, that is making waves in New York publishing. Authors Equity is a non-traditional publishing company founded by some very high-profile New York publishing professionals. Madeline McIntosh, former chief executive of Penguin Random House US, Nina von Moltke, former president and director of strategic development for Penguin Random House, and Don Weisberg, former CEO of Macmillan, all of whom left their previous posts between 2022 and 2023. So they are recently exited the Big Five space. And now they've started this new venture, Grant. And well, it's rare to see the kind of coverage they've been getting, I will say that, for doing something that's frankly not all that original.
Star power has a kind of reverberating effect in that way. And Brooke, I know you wrote your own Substack about Authors Equity, you know, and called the business model hybrid. They're not offering advances. Authors will get 60 to 70% of the proceeds from book sales. And interestingly, you know, they're paying authors monthly, which is a good thing. They're relying primarily on freelancers, which was another thing that seemed to get a lot of attention from industry watchers. So Brooke, I'm curious, you know, maybe I picked up a little bit of irkness. Is that the word for it? You're a little bit irked that Authors Equity got so much attention for a not so original model. But tell me, you know, what you think about its viability and is this good or bad for publishing?
Yeah, that's a good question, Grant. You're right. The coverage they got, you know, and the fact that so many people were quick to praise their innovation just felt like a symptom of New York myopia to me. Mm-hmm. It has no bearing on my thoughts about Authors Equity, though. Do I think it's viable? Yes, I do, actually. And ultimately, I think it's a really good thing for non-traditional publishing because this is the place where there's industry growth and innovation. Kathleen said that. I say that all the time. And it's not that Authors Equity isn't innovative. It's just that they're entering into an already thriving indie space that has lots of players in the sandbox who have already been hard at work forging ideas, you know, and attempting to define this space. And a nod to that from New York media would have been nice. That said, you know, the bigger names and the bigger players that come into this sandbox, I think the more legitimizing that is for the non-traditional space. And that is great. Mm-hmm. And so I think Authors Equity it's a welcome addition. I think that they're going to succeed. And I think I'm mostly curious to see what names are going to attach themselves to this press.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I think the other thing we have to talk about when talking about Authors Equity is the money. You know, everyone wants to talk about the money. And there are a few things to point out. And one is that Authors Equity has a few big investors who are authors, James Clear, Louise Penny, and Tim Ferriss. You might recognize those names. And we don't know how much they're investing or what they hope to see by way of profits here. But nonetheless, you know, more star power. And as I mentioned, Authors Equity is giving 60 to 70% of royalties back to authors. And Brooke, I know from your model that this is a common percentage to offer to authors in hybrid business models, but then you don't make much money off the back end because much of that is going to the distributor for the work they do, which is commission-based. And then She Writes Press and Authors Equity actually share a distributor, Simon & Schuster. So what's your take on how Authors Equity will earn real money?
Yeah, I think that's the rub right there. It will be very interesting. You know, if they're giving authors zero advance and then they have all these expenses and then they're only keeping, you know, 30 to 40% of the proceeds, I'm sure they are relying on the idea that they're going to have some big breakout hits. And maybe they will. I would love to see that. And I think, as I said, it will legitimize for authors that these other business models are going to be possible, right? But the margins in publishing are just so ridiculously thin. You know, so when you're looking at what they're keeping per book, it's less than a dollar, you know, maybe far less than a dollar. So that money is a big question. And I've been watching with great interest Bex Baruchi over at Row House. We had her on the show a while back because she set out to do this incredibly ambitious model where she's paying authors $40,000 per book. Like, that's what they give, and 40% royalties. And it's a community funded model. And so the idea, of course, is that eventually your backlist sales are paying for your frontlist acquisitions, but it does take a while to get there. So right now she's out there furiously pleading with her community for money. And it's just a tough hustle.
Yeah, definitely. And you made a good point in your Substack post that very few people have the deep pockets it takes to start a publishing company. And so this contributes to the wave of the future being hybrid or other non-traditional models. And I don't think many people understand how much corporate publishing survives due to its deep, deep backlist. And I know that backlist really bailed them out during the pandemic, actually.
Oh my gosh, for sure. I mean, James and I are traveling to Japan this month on vacation, and I bought two classics for us to read together while we're there, Huck Finn and Lord of the Flies. He's 13, so these seem like good choices. Mm-hmm. And so just consider how many books are being bought every single year by families, parents, teachers, schools, you know, that are these kinds of classics that have been around for forever that every kid in the country is going to read in school. That's the money that funds these extravagant bets that publishers make for their frontlist acquisitions. But of course, me and other people who are starting publishing companies don't have anything like that when we start. You know, the author's equity folks don't have that kind of money. So that's the thing. I mean, we're opting for this other non-traditional space. But like I said earlier, the sandbox gets bigger and, you know, it changes the whole face of the publishing industry.
Sandbox keeps getting bigger. And that's in part because we want all of our listeners to be building castles in that sandbox. Or books in this case. So keep listening to Right Minded. Invite your friends to play in this sandbox of words with you, with us. And, you know, that's because we've all got important stories to tell. So we want to make sure you tell your story your way. We'll see you next week.